There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my
Right, 107 FM Talk, 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. We are waiting comments here from President Trump as today suspicious devices, like I said, to an untrained eye like me, they look like pipe bombs, but I guess at this point still defining them as suspicious devices mailed in some cases, hand-delivered in others, at least as the information we're getting now, to homes of former presidents, for the Obamas, for the Clintons, also intercepted on the way to Eric Holder's residence. Now seeing with the CNN package, it was, I think, addressed to James Brennan, or John Brennan. Also packages delivered to either the office or the, I think it's the office of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, of course, down in Florida, former DNC chairwoman. Remember, she had to leave after feeding the answers in those debates there. Also, some word that maybe Senator Kamala Harris out in California had received one of these earlier in the week, I guess Monday, of some similar device was delivered to the home or nearby the home of George Soros. And right now, there's just a lot of wondering, you know, on this story. Now, there are people, I think, on both extremes of this have already decided exactly how it went down. But there's the rest of us who are trying to get the facts. Now, I know that this has been condemned by Vice President Pence as of this morning, also doubled down on by President Trump with his retweet of Pence's condemnation. And we're waiting at any point now. We're going to go to a commentary here from President Trump. He is going to address the nation on these packages. Once again, if you didn't follow this, this kind of started breaking this morning in the 8 o'clock hour during Mobile Mornings, as we got a note that this suspicious package had been delivered to the home of the Clintons. I would wonder about that. If it arrived this morning, and maybe it's not, maybe postal service routes are different up there, but it'd be about 9 o'clock in the morning their time, or maybe a little earlier. Would that have been something by USPS, something that was just on the front porch? Is it delivered by some other mechanism? As people have said, that, listen, if it is sent through U.S. Postal Service or FedEx or UPS, there's a lot of tracking goes on there. They could have that information on, or, you know, at least who sent the package, let alone who might have built this. And if not hand-delivered, are there, you would think, at some of these residences? I'm just going to, I'm once again speculating here, merely speculation, but you talk about the neighborhoods and the homes for people like former presidents, Obama, former President Clinton, George Soros, those kind of people, whatever you think about politically, think about the neighborhoods where they are. They're the cameras that must be there coming and going to the neighborhood in the first place, let alone on those individual properties. You imagine there would be a robust presence of those kind of cameras there. So forensically, also hearing some people in the know from the FBI or former FBI folks talk with people at Fox News, they said the fact that these suspicious packages, which, like I said, look like pipe bombs to me, are unexploded, will be a treasure trove of forensic data for them. I don't know who has the job of taking those things apart, but they will yield a lot of information in an investigation. So that's kind of what it stands right now, awaiting those remarks from President Trump. And what, tell you what, we're going to run to a quick news break. We're going to get to this also later this hour. I will talk to our buddy Cam Barston, his show, What's Working, tonight, 6 o'clock. You know what? It's not just tonight. It's every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. And just before we go to the break here, too, Cam's in the studio with me. Tonight, a encore presentation, and you're talking beer. Time to hoist up a pint.
We're celebrating the end of summer, which is the beer selling time of this part of the world.
Yeah.
And we're replaying Chris Fuchsia's interview. Chris is third-generation Budweiser Busch distributor. And it's one of those businesses from the outside looking in, looks sexy and easy, but we learned that there's quite a bit to it. So we'll replay Chris's content as a celebration to the death of summer.
All right, and that's happening 6 tonight. But also, you want to tell folks if they have an idea, have something that...
Well, I got a couple of shows working and looking for some audience participation, some feedback, some insights, and I'll cue that up when we come back.
All right, we'll do that, and we are waiting President Trump. As soon as he addresses the nation, we'll go live to that audio.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 116 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Wednesday, and we are waiting commentary from President Trump, who is to address the nation here. There for a opioid bill signing, and but I'm sure the beginning of that presser will be about those suspicious packages today. Also have my friend Cam Marston in studio and talking about tonight, 6 o'clock, what's working. Every Wednesday night here at FM Talk 106.5, what's working. And your show also available. If people want to binge listen, if they want to catch up on the show, they can go to go where to get the podcast?
CamMarston.com. That's my website. CamMarston.com. The link is across the top of the website. You'll go there and you can listen to it one of three. I think we have three or four different places now that you can listen to that podcast.
Also, if you have not caught the show before, I'll give you the old, hey, Cam, what's your show about?
Workplace and workforce trends. That's what my business has been about for the past 20 years. And what I do is find people that have interesting insights into the workplace and the workforce, teaching us what's changing out there, best practices. And then we go into as well people who have interesting businesses that are doing some remarkably creative things within the workplace or the workforce. And one of those examples is, like we said just before the break, is the beer business. It's it looks, like I say, it looks all dilly-dilly from the outside.
Right.
But it's an extraordinary amount of work, as I've learned. And you, one of the things that, in speaking with Chris Fuchs, that caught me off guard, I guess is the way to say it, is these beer companies spend an extraordinary amount of time and money developing a brand, investing in the brand. One of my favorites is local, right across the bay here, Fairhope.
And I want to talk about them because I'm going to be out there tomorrow with the show, but we're going to go straight to Washington now and get the audio as President Trump has entered there into the, I think we're looking at the East Room here, and we'll address the nation. So let's go live to the White House.
Good afternoon. Please sit down. Before I begin, I want to take a moment to talk about today's news and the attempted attacks on President Clinton, President Obama, their families, public officials, individuals, and organizations. We cannot tolerate those cowardly attacks, and I strongly condemn all who choose violence. I'm grateful to the Secret Service, as well as the local and federal law enforcement, for all they do on a daily basis to keep us safe and encourage people across the country to choose kindness over hatred. I want to welcome you all to the White House to reflect on the progress this administration has made in tackling the opioid crisis, and more importantly, to look ahead at the work still to be done. We are here to talk about the continued actions we are taking to combat the opioid epidemic, which my husband will talk about in a few minutes. I must say I'm proud of our president and the work being done in the White House and across so many agencies to help those affected by drug abuse and addiction. Just last week, I visited Thomas Jefferson University Hospital to learn about their maternal addiction treatment, education, and research program called MATTER. This program supports families and babies born with neonatal absence syndrome by providing mothers with the tools they need to help become successful parents. My campaign, Be Best, is committed to helping children and the many issues they face as they grow up. And sadly, drug abuse is one of those issues. Be Best will continue to shine a light on successful programs like MATTER that demonstrate positive results for children. Over the past year, I have traveled both nationally and internationally, learning about many of the programs offered through private organizations, schools, and hospitals, which are meant to help children and families as they deal with drug addiction. What I constantly hear is the need for support at all levels. Law enforcement needs our support and the resources necessary to stop criminals from putting drugs on the streets. Families need the resources to get treatment and follow-up care for loved ones. Those who are addicted need the support, resources, and guidance to know they are fighting a disease and should not be ashamed. Young mothers need the support necessary to not only beat their addiction, but get the tools needed.
All right, we are going to cut away for a second from the White House. I know the president is standing right next to First Lady Melania, and we will, as soon as it goes to the president, I'm sure he will address what has happened this morning. We will go to that, and continue our conversation, too, with our buddy Cam Marston, who's in studio. Show tonight, 6 o'clock. And you were mentioning, as we went to break, a couple things. Number one, tasty beer from Fairhope Brewing Company, which, by the way, Midday Mobile, live tomorrow with Brian and the gang out at Fairhope Brewing Company. So show's on the road. Fairhope folks come to see y'all tomorrow. Taking the show on the road, the huggers, the FM Talk 106.5 gear, your chance to get registered in the Ultimate Tailgate Prize Contest, all that good stuff coming to Fairhope tomorrow, so come see me. But yeah, we're talking about the beer business.
Well, let's talk about Fairhope. I think they're fantastic. I'm a consumer of their product, and I love the logo, that pelican.
Yes.
I think it's fantastic, and I have no idea who did it, but it looks wonderful. And these companies, like Fairhope, spend a lot of time creating that logo, investing in it, getting the artwork right, kind of giving their vibe, their culture through the logo, right? And then you spend so much time and effort and energy on this thing, and some guy walks up to the bar and says, I'll just take whatever IPA you have. And you're like, oh my gosh, these people have invested so much in their logo.
And they're not asking for, yeah, they're asking for a tissue and not Kleenex.
That's
in
right.
That case.
That's right.
And, so that's a part of the, I guess, the beer business. And we'll talk more about this as the president is approaching the podium. I think we will get comments right now. Let's go to the White House.
I want to thank you very much, Melania. I know how hard you've worked on this. And that's just one of many languages that you know. So it's just amazing the way you can do it. Thank you very much, darling. Appreciate it. Also, I want to thank Mrs. Pence for being here. You have been just so terrific working alongside of our great Vice President. And thank you very much, Karen. Really appreciate it. I'd like to begin today's remarks by providing an update on the suspicious packages and devices mailed to current and former high-ranking government officials. The safety of the American people is my highest and absolute priority. I have just concluded a briefing with the FBI, Department of Justice, Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Secret Service. As we speak, the packages are being inspected by top explosive experts, and a major federal investigation is now underway. The full weight of our government is being deployed to conduct this investigation and bring those responsible for these despicable acts to justice. We will spare no resources or expense in this effort. And I just want to tell you that in these times, we have to unify. We have to come together and send one very clear, strong, unmistakable message that acts or threats of political violence of any kind have no place in the United States of America. It's a very bipartisan statement. I can tell you from both sides, we both agree on that. This egregious conduct is abhorrent to everything we hold dear and sacred as Americans. My administration will provide additional updates as they become available. And I just want to thank everybody for their understanding. We're extremely angry, upset, unhappy about what we witnessed this morning, and we will get to the bottom of it. We're gathered together today to address America's drug and opioid crisis.
All right, yeah, we're going to, and we'll get more on that audio, I'm sure, tomorrow morning when we talk about the presser going on right now. But President Trump addressing the suspicious devices, or, like I said, to me, looks like pipe bombs delivered at least four, well, now five, and reports of more today, and we will break that down. Also, guest in studio, Cam Marston, what's working? I know I've been trying to get through some discussion with you, and then we keep getting interrupted by the president and the first lady and all that. But
you know, it's okay to get interrupted by the president and the first lady. You know, I can deal with that.
Yeah, that's going to be all right for you. So, we're talking about tonight's show, which is an encore, talking about the beer business.
Yeah, into summer. Let's celebrate. What was a good summer? We talk about the. I learned about the amount of legwork that they do to create a brand, an image in the brand, and how someone will step up to the bar. And I'm raising my hand. I'm guilty and say I'll just have whatever local IPA you got. And all that effort towards creating the brand has been wasted. There's a everybody I learned to in the interview with Chris. Trying to capture the next generation of beer drinker, the millennials. What are they going to drink? What are they going to do? And we know that they are moving from brand to brand. They're sampling. They're moving all over the place. He calls it, and they, Skumageddon, SKUs in the warehouse. They got to have so many SKUs to keep up with them, because this one will run for a week, or there'll be a rush on this one and then a rush on this one. And in order to keep up with this fickle demand, they got to keep coming out with new product for them to try and this next generation to try and remain relevant in the marketplace. And it just kind of speaks to that valuable, old school, hard to find these days, frankly, Bud drinker in out of Chris's warehouse, a Bud guy, the Bud Light guy that just goes back to the same thing. Regardless of the countless 100 new brands that are on your grocery store aisle, he's going to grab that same brand that he's been familiar with since he was 21 and continues to go back to that thing. How valuable these people are to companies like Chris.
And how do they retain them?
How do they retain them? Keeping them fresh, keeping the product relevant, the advertisements funny, making these people proud to reach back in that beer case for that same familiar brand of beer.
I wonder if that is, you look at some of the big advertising campaign, let's talk about Super Bowl or whatever, and the big beer commercials, how much of that is recruiting you always want new customers, obviously, but how much of that is about recruiting new customers or keeping current customers?
I remember talking to an ad guy about that one time. He said an advertisement has three roles. One is new customers, two is current customers, three is employees, making them proud of the brand that they represent, that they stock on the shelves, that they manufacture in the brewers. So it's a little bit of everything.
All right, so you can check out that show tonight. Of course, if you want to go back, if you couldn't be here at 6, you can go to the website.
CamMarston.com, where we've got all these shows, and they continue to get downloaded. We're happy to see a lot of traction on them and getting emails and information from across the country for people that are picking these things up, listening to them, wanting more information or offering feedback. It's really pretty cool, frankly.
Yeah, it was great because it's super pertinent, and as a Mobile guy, and so many of the voices are people that are from around our area, but the messaging is true whether you're in Mobile and Baldwin County or you're, in New York or Chicago or L.A.
Yeah, working hard to make the content relevant for regardless of where you are. So there are definitely workplace and workforce trends in different pockets of the country, and where we find those trends, I try to exploit them and say, these trends are unique. For example, working on a show out of the West Coast, these are the trends impacting the workforce on the West Coast, in my experience, is it takes about 5 years for those trends to wind up in Mobile, Alabama. They slowly move to the Deep South, the workplace workforce trends, benefit options, benefit packages, things like that. So we're trying to find these pockets of the trends to track them. They're on their way. They're coming to our part of the world. They're about 5 years delayed. So I want to know
what they are. You're like a forecaster.
Workplace trend forecast. That's right.
All right. Very good. We're coming back more with Cam and talk about some of the shows upcoming and how you can interact with Cam, offer ideas, suggestions, all those kind of good things when we return right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 135, FM Talk 106.5, and Midday Mobile. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com. You can also check us out Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all over the place. Love to interact with you there. And podcast, even though, you know, I mean, we're talking about my buddy Cam's podcast, but we got plenty of podcasts, too. 40 hours a week of live local radio. We put it up for you in a podcastable form. You can get it buffet style through the front page of the website, fmtalk1065.com, when you click the link that says podcast, but also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Also get our podcast. If you're listening to your jams on Spotify, you can listen to us there in podcast form. Also, TuneIn Radio, where you stream the radio station on your smartphone, also has a podcast department that has our podcast as well. So check it out. All right, continuing our conversation with Cam Barson, what's working tonight at 6 o'clock, every Wednesday night at 6 o'clock. But you were saying that working on upcoming shows now.
I continue to comb what I think is relevant media in my space. To see what the trends are.
In your area. You don't mean, he doesn't mean MySpace. Like
no, I don't mean MySpace. In my area, underneath my umbrella of expertise. And I don't literally mean under an umbrella either. but here's one.
Okay.
401k crisis. I see one story saying there is a retirement crisis brewing in this nation. I see another story saying we are all on track for retirement. And they are these stories are very slanted based on, I think, who's writing the stories and who's paying for the writing of the stories. But one of the things we're going to do upcoming is talk about it. Is there a retirement crisis upcoming? What is the what does it look like? And what does a retirement crisis mean? Does it mean that I can't live the lavish lifestyle that I want to in retirement? Or does it mean I get kicked out of my workplace with zero funds available to me after years of work?
And so, do you see it being this crisis being a crisis of no funding or a crisis in change of how people are saving money for retirement?
I think it's a little of both. There are a lot of people in the workplace today that were caught between the end of the pension era and the beginning of the 401k, the end of the defined benefit and the beginning of the defined contribution, and they didn't transfer well into the defined contribution.
So there's a slug of those people coming.
There's a slug of those people coming, and they didn't want to make the election to take money out of their own salary to prepare for their own retirement. So they're typically the younger portion of the baby boom generation.
Okay, yeah, I was about to ask you, what age group are we talking about, Cam?
They're the younger baby boomers, and they were in a very vulnerable spot when 2008 hit, the Great Recession. And they say, I've talked to them, we didn't have the funds to put it away in 2008. I had a child that was trying to get a job. I had other children in college. I was in a vulnerable state in 2008, and I was unable to fund my defined contribution. So what it means now, 10 years later, is these people are eyeballing retirement. Is there a retirement crisis? So what I'd love is feedback from people listening, say, yes, there is, and I am an example, or no, there's not, because I have realistic expectations of my retirement, or I've prepared well for my retirement. I've done the things that I should have. And I want their thoughts, and I want to be able to speak to them, and I want them to email me at cam, C-A-M, at cammarston.com, and let me know what their thoughts are. Retirement crisis or not, hoax, media, bona fide, whatever it may be. I'm very curious about this.
Now, you can get probably, I could imagine, just a whole bunch of different opinions on that. I mean, it seems like it's going to be, you know, personal experience, personal situation will color how you see this.
Yeah. Well, if my definition of retirement is I want to live 6 months in the south of Spain every year and I can't do it, therefore it's a crisis, that's out of your mind. You're ridiculous. However, if you're, you know, I got to save my apple seeds that I eat to plant them out back to feed myself in the next 2 or 3 years, that might be defined closer to
right. Okay. You've given us the bookends. That's fine. I agree with you wholeheartedly on the bookends.
Yeah.
But the in-between, right, that's where the nuance comes in. That's what's interesting to me. I'll be listening for that.
Oh, yeah. And there's one more component. We'll move on. How many people out there are expecting their children to take care of them? I will move into with my children. I expect my children to care for me in my infirmity. What is the expectation of people eyeballing retirement of the obligation of their children?
I made my children sign contracts. They'd take care of me.
Yeah, mine have made me sign contracts that I would not need their help.
You need a better lawyer, man.
I need better children and a better lawyer. That's right. That's right.
So that show about this, and these are people that are, but you're talking about the younger end of the baby boomers. These people are, this is retirement time for these
absolutely.
Folks.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I will turn 50 myself in a matter of months, and for the first time, I'm ready to say there is a glimmer on the horizon that is retirement. The sun hasn't poked its head up above the horizon, but there's a little brightness out there that I think, yeah, I can begin to sense it. It's still a good 15 years away.
Mm-hmm.
But I look 15 years back, and it hadn't taken long to get from 15 years to today. That time flew by.
Yeah.
So I look out forward and say, maybe it's going to fly by again. And if so, I need to be thinking about this.
I think a lot of us will, too. So we're checking that show out. What else you have in the works? What do you...
Had a wonderful conversation earlier this week by a guy that's been hit by the tariffs. He's lost a huge piece of business. He's in the timber business by the tariffs. And he is a very big advocate of the current presidential administration. So he has been hit hard, but he's afraid to complain because he thinks the tariffs are the right thing. And I'm very curious.
So it's his ox getting gored, and he's still on board.
He's on board. Of course, he wishes he could go back and say, hey, I'm all for the tariffs, except for MySpace.
Sure.
Not MySpace. Here we go again. Except for my area of business.
Right.
And I'm curious how many people out there have been hit by the tariffs who are having to struggle first to regain the business lost due to these tariffs. How many have found an avenue around them? The guy that I was talking to said there is an opportunity for us in Mexico. We've never pursued it, but now it's our sole focus is to go sell our product in Mexico, straight from China to Mexico. What are people doing? What is their business? How have the tariffs impacted them? How are they reacting? What is their plan forward? And I'm also curious, do you have a lobbying effort in place by your manufacturing community to try to knock this thing out so it's no longer impacting you? So I'd love to hear from people who have firsthand experience and their plans for managing the impact of tariffs on their business.
You picked the right town to do that. The right state and right town, even though I think there's a lot of people that are, as you described, backers of the president's plan, what he's doing. But yeah, you walk down a couple different streets here in the city and see people that are affected directly by the tariffs.
Yes, and it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting twist. Love the president, hate what he's done to me, continue to love the president.
Right.
It's an odd thing. Having trouble feeding my family, love the president.
Is it that extreme that you think?
The one guy that I spoke to said it's going to be a huge impact on his business. And he's wearing a brave face, man. And he, like you and me, realizes this part of the world, we are big fans of the president down here. And he's afraid to say anything cross to him.
Right.
So about him, rather. But yeah, in his case, it's pretty extreme.
I tell them there's life after it. I've said critiques from time to time, and they're angry at me. But when you see it's right, then you say it's right. See it's wrong. I don't know. You see Caterpillar kind of use that same logic yesterday. When earnings came out in the market, which by the way, Dow down 160 right now. It's been bouncing around 160 to 200 today. Caterpillar down. They said because of tariff issues. 3M said something similar. But then you had companies like Verizon that does some serious overseas production on, they got to have the phones that come in to put their services on. They're up in earnings. So maybe they had a workaround.
I certainly am not privy to any of that. What about Harley-Davidson?
Yeah, down. Is that down because of the export market there for their motorcycles? Is it because of importing, the steel to build those motorcycles? Or is it the fact that they were crossways with the president?
There's a grudge against them. That's right. Yeah. There's that one. And there's also the fact that Harley-Davidson has built a business based on baby boomers trying to remain young, hip, and cool.
You're putting the two stories together.
Oh, yeah. Baby boomers got to stay cool. The Xers and millennials haven't really liked Harleys the same degree. Boomers are getting old. They're getting tippy. Their legs are getting skinny. And holding up a heavy Harley's hard to do. So there's a demographic factor to this thing, too.
Oh, my gosh. Let me grab one call here before we finish up. And if you want to plug those headphones in real fast at the underneath the desk there, because we'll do this on the fly like we do everything. We'll go to Tim and Daphne. We'll grab one call here from Tim. Tim, you're up.
Hey, thanks, guys. I just happened to hear the conversation about the pension, and I was just curious. When a company freezes their pension and no longer adds to your pension, and the 401k, and you're doing that too, would it behoove someone under the age of retirement to maybe look to go to another job and try to build a new 401k, or see if that other company offers a pension, or do you think it's better just to ride it out?
That's not like a financial advisor question.
That's beyond my expertise. I'm unable to confidently answer your question with any amount of credibility to that. You've got a tough decision to make. saving is always better than not saving. Saving more is always better than saving less. That's the rule. That's all I can tell you. You've got a great question for an advisor.
So let's do this. Okay. Be listening to the shows in the future. Get somebody on there to, answer those kind of questions.
Yeah, I find this prep for retirement fascinating because it's a perfect mix of extraordinary volatile emotion. Here's what I think about money, and a very predictable stock market. You're trying to marry those two things into a plan. And
did you just say predictable stock market?
A very predictable.
Did you sit in my studio and say predictable stock market?
After the past 100 years, we see a very clear trend of the stock market.
The long term. I'm with you.
The long term is what we're talking about.
Worth it. Just run it back to January to now and tell me what you think.
No, that's true. Yeah.
All right. Remind folks the website once again.
Oh, my website, cammarston.com, cammarston.com, where you can find all the podcasts.
All right, good stuff. Tonight, 6 o'clock, what's working with that man right there, Cam Marston? Thanks for being here.
Yeah, appreciate it, Sean.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, 150 FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Wednesday. By the way, just checking out a couple stories here. Obviously, you've the big national story, suspicious packages. That's what we're referring to these pipe bombs as now. They are at least 5 deliveries, and now we're hearing of another couple more. You heard Mayor de Blasio earlier in that presser say he wouldn't be surprised if more were delivered. And I know, the internet has run with that and said, oh, see, he's behind it. Come on. No, I think what it is, I think he had some sort of briefing before that presser and slipped up and said something, that he was probably told in confidence by law enforcement and the people that are putting themselves on the line out there. I don't think it's a big conspiracy that de Blasio is behind the whole thing. I just think it is. There's some, maybe it was Cuomo. I don't know if it was de Blasio or Cuomo said it. Maybe it was Governor Cuomo said, not surprising if more packages show up. That would be something to watch for today, for sure. We'll give you more on the story, of course, throughout the day. News updates twice an hour, even during Paul Feinbaum. And then, of course, a full recap tomorrow morning starting at 6 with Mobile Mornings. Also, my buddy Cam Marston in the studio. We're talking about what's working with Cam Marston and tonight's show. Encore show, but you're working on new shows. We've talked about retirement. We've talked about what that means for this slug of people. I didn't know they were there. It's like a reverse donut hole. You said it's the tail end of the baby boomers. From the pension days were ending, and that whole paying for it out of your income was not hip yet, right?
Was not cool. People didn't like to see their money going the other way.
But they've only had a few decades to know that's coming, Cam.
I'm with you. It makes complete sense. It's a discipline that many refuse to pick up on, thinking that maybe the pension would come back or this is not permanent. I don't know what it was, but there are quite a few that claim this quote-unquote retirement crisis is going to hit them pretty bad. I don't know whether that's true or not. That's what I'm trying to get to the bottom of.
Yeah, you're trying to get individual stories to talk about that.
That's right. And we're going to have a financial advisor on with us at the same time talking about this financial crisis and what people can do. My show, obviously, is not a financial services show.
Right.
But the 401k, the defined benefit plan in the workplace, is a big deal.
Right.
Is a big deal. People offer it as a perk. They offer matches for the contributions that you make. There are all kinds of teasers to up your contribution to get into retirement success. So it's a big deal in the workplace to be able to offer a 401k.
And when you said on trends, obviously with your company, you're always watching these trends and you have a way to forecast this because you've watched what's happened in other places. You're talking about California and elsewhere, and it migrates its way here to the Deep South.
They seem to start on the West Coast, then the East Coast, and then slowly move towards the Deep South. The trends, I think if we looked at marijuana legalization right now, we'd begin to see that. California's blessed it. It's going to slowly move to the Deep South. Alabama being one of the last. You look at the lottery. A very similar thing. Blessed on the edges of the continent, slowly moving towards the middle. Whether it'll actually get a toehold here, I don't know. But there's.
You want to make a bet?
I'll take a bet.
It's in the next 3 years he'll get it done. It's not even what it's the wine spritzer of the gambling world, but
yeah,
a lot of exactly. They need the revenue. It's not driven by any. You just have to get to a point where there are fewer and fewer people that have some kind of moral opposition or business opposition to it, and because government always has a level of needing more money.
Yes.
So once they figure they can get it through. And I think they're going to get it through.
There's a
Republican bill for the lottery going to be brought up in session this year.
Well, the Republicans have been opposing it, have they not? Isn't it the Republican side
correct.
That said this is,
correct.
We're going to legislate
in the past,
your morals?
In the past.
Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you. Listen what, there's a Republican bill
yeah.
for a lottery coming up in session this year. So that's something that 10 years ago, 12, 15 years ago, you wouldn't be saying, and you're saying now. So.
Yeah.
All right, you're also looking for...
One more. I had a great call with a retailer here locally last week who's been sabotaged by online reviews. Fake. Even some of them are dated a year in advance. So the person who's reviewing them is not doing them very cleverly. So they've got an online review on their website dated for something that hasn't happened yet. And, this woman told me, it is impacting her business. Online reviews. There used to be qualified people that would review products and services. Do you remember? It was like an electronics company that would put out reviews on TVs as mm-hmm. they came out.
These sure.
were, quote-unquote, professionals. Now you and I have an equal say to a professional.
Whether
the TV is good or not. And I think there's value in that. I mean, I've reviewed over 200 hotels in my years of travel mm-hmm. right now and tell you this is what I think about it. But what point does an online review become sabotage? And how do you combat it? How do you utilize them to build your businesses? Because the focus of the show is workplace and workforce trends, and there's no doubt that online reviews have been a trend that have shaped the success of organizations for the past, or for the of retailers as much as anything else, for the past 8-10 years, maybe. You go online and you see the TripAdvisor. That's the one that I look at because mm-hmm. I travel a lot. TripAdvisor review. And that thing means a lot to these places. Talk to me, somebody, talk to me about your experience with online reviews, how you utilize them, how do you combat them if they come back negatively, how you perhaps seed positive ones. Can you utilize these? Can you seed a positive review that'll help your business, and how do you do it? I want to hear from you. I want to know your story.
Yeah, if you don't think that's big, type in any, whether it be a product or a destination or a service, and you type it into Google, and within the first 1, 2, or 3 suggested endings, it'll be opinion, review, something to that effect. And this is mine. I'll throw it in the mix. I use this idea that I take away the extremes on either end.
Yes, I agree.
Maybe it's my life, you know, how I deal with a lot of things in my life, and unless the extreme bad reviews are the majority. But if there are real positive, over-the-top, sugary, sweet reviews and really negative, nothing is right reviews, I take those out and I try to see the ones in the middle is my best guess of what might be true.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a prudent way to do it. I do it with the reviews that I get from the seminars that I deliver and the presentations that I deliver. Discard the top and bottom 10%, read the middle ones. Those are the ones that are most bona fide. I'm curious, though, how people around here utilize these reviews to help build their business, what their strategies are.
All right, so where if they want to be in part of that show, how do they do it?
Cam, C-A-M, at cammarston.com. Email me, and we'll be responded.
All right, very good. Thanks for your time today.
Yeah, appreciate it, Sean.
All right, we're out of here. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Remember, keep up with us online, fmtalk1065.com. Also, Facebook, Twitter, and you can check us out on Instagram, where Dalton put a picture of his winning lotto ticket. Go check it out.